Folks, not sure I've looked more forward to an on-air chat because it's been some heck of a week in college football, and we're fortunate enough to have a guy who's wired in. You know him as the fine journalist for USA Today, spent time here in town, usatoday.com online, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, keeping busy?
Oh, marginally, yeah, absolutely. A lot of work going on. A lot of goofy things happening.
Yeah, let's start with something simple. How was your holiday?
Oh, it was great. I enjoyed it. Had the family over, and, that was great. And then, after that, it got hectic, which is good.
Yeah. Now, let's start with Tennessee. So we all know the details. Greg Schiano just about hired. Huge backlash because there was a connection made during his time at Penn State during the Sandusky era. He was never investigated. In essence, his name appeared in two lines of that investigation. We don't know if Mike McQuarrie's story is accurate. But first, all your years covering this story, this sport, I should say, have you ever come across anything quite like this?
No. In fact, we've not seen anything like this on a variety of levels, starting with just the fact that, before we ever get into how the instigators of this, what they did and things like that, the fact that they were able to whip up sort of a frenzy is a testament to the power of social media.
Yeah.
Which we didn't have, in previous times. The closest thing to this, and it pales in comparison, you recall when Auburn hired Gene Chizik from Iowa State. And I think they were 5-7 or something like that. But they hired Gene Chizik, who had been a defensive coordinator at Auburn, and he comes back to Auburn as a head coach, and some guy met them at the Auburn Opelika Airport, which is just kind of a tiny airstrip, and basically heckled and booed them when they got off the plane.
Wow.
That's about the closest thing. Now, that did not derail the hire. So, but I can't think of anything else at all.
No.
This is the first time we've ever seen this, what happened on Sunday.
Now, when you consider who Mike McQuarrie is, and in my opinion, not the most trustworthy guy, like Herm Edwards said back then, sometimes you just got to get in a fist fight. I know you were on Paul Feinbaum discussing this, and be it social media or another form of a public outcry, not based solely on facts, how much of a danger zone did the Volunteer Athletic Director Curry enter with this kind of decision based on that information?
Well, I don't know what kind of a danger zone he entered. The thing that bothered me about the entire deal was this. There is a significant portion, apparently, of the Tennessee fan base that was underwhelmed with the hire of Greg Schiano, or the, almost hire of Greg Schiano that was clearly in the works on Sunday. That's okay. That's your right as a fan. No problem at all if you think that it's a bad hire and you want to voice your displeasure. Okay. Doesn't mean that you know what you're talking about, but I get it. It wasn't the home run hire that you thought it was going to be, right?
Right.
So the second thing I would say is this, though. What bothered me about the entire deal was some very small subset of instigators took one line in a deposition that was double hearsay, that never came up in the grand jury testimony by the same person, that the very aggressive prosecutor who went after anybody and everybody for anything and everything he could in the Penn State case didn't think was worthy of going after. Didn't think that double hearsay allegation was worthy of going after. Somebody took that and essentially turned it into a wedge to try to make sure this guy didn't get hired at Tennessee because of football reasons. And so they end up shredding or potentially shredding a man's reputation because they don't want to hire him at their school for football reasons, not because of some supposed, covering up child rape or whatever. That for some people was a convenient way to use as a wedge. And that right there bothered me tremendously because I actually believe that's immoral. Now, look, I get it. The vast majority of Tennessee fans were upset. That was not them.
Right.
There's a good group, probably a large group of Tennessee fans who at some point heard something about these allegations, didn't look into them, and assumed that the other people were right when they were talking about all this stuff. So that's not nearly as bad. It's not good. You should probably check it out before you go do that. But just the overwhelming thing for me was just, disgust.
Yeah.
Again, I don't have a problem if you want to express your disappointment, your anger, your whatever at the hire that your school is about to make. That's your right. But to use something as flimsy as that, just to basically put the deep six on a football hire when you're basically, trashing a guy's reputation was terrible.
No.
Look, I don't usually come out that strong on stuff. And I'm not trying to paint every single Vols fan or every single Vols fan who was against the hire with that brush. I'm talking about the people who did that and did it on purpose.
No, definitely uncharted, choppy waters. Talking college football with George Schroeder of USA Today. So in the current hierarchy or even the past 25, 30 years, I would consider Florida State a far superior job and program to Texas A&M. So I hear Jimbo Fisher considering making that change. I mean, we know the money is just crazy all over. But is it logical to think, has his time in Tallahassee run its course? What do you make of, I guess, this potential story?
Look, I think that it probably has a little bit to do with what you just said, time running its course. But, look, he flirted pretty hard with LSU the last 2 years and decided to stay. And now LSU's a better job than Texas A&M, I think. Neither job probably is as good as Florida State, although the LSU fans would really be upset with you, and the Texas A&M fans would obviously be upset with me. But here's the thing. Those things change on the ground in your situation. And so Jimbo Fisher has long felt like that the folk at Florida State have not been fully invested in making football, a priority. Now, I'm not saying he's right. I'm saying that's how he feels. And he watches Clemson rise as a power, and he watches as Clemson invests and invests and invests and invests in facilities and resources and assistant coaching salaries and everything else. And he feels like he's pulling teeth to get the same at Florida State. He doesn't understand why that is when Florida State, has turned into a traditional power over the last 40 years. He doesn't understand why that is. And so at a certain point, the relationships deteriorate with the administration, and that has happened too. And then you look and you say, okay, Texas A&M is not as good a job, but look at all the facilities they have. Look at the investments they've made. Look at what they're willing to do for me because they really care about football and want to get it done. And that makes it really enticing, I think, to him. It looks like he's going to go.
Wow.
I still think he can change his mind and get what he wants, but it sure looks like he's going to go. And again, I'm not saying he's right.
Right.
And that the Florida State folk have not done what they should for football. I'm just saying that's what he thinks. And that would be the reason why you would take what people are going to consider a lesser job.
Interesting. Now, we've spoken over the years about Mike Gundy. I always liked him as a coach. I think he made that program relevant, and that's a heck of an accomplishment. I guess he pondered Tennessee. So what have you learned as far as maybe what they were willing to pony up, how seriously he considered leaving Stillwater, and is Oklahoma State a better situation than Tennessee?
Yeah, I think it is. It's more stable. I don't know that its ceiling is as high, but it also doesn't have the same floor. And look, Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy has them set up on the best run they've ever had. Now, have they passed Oklahoma in the Big 12? No. Historically, it's going to be hard to do that. But he's got them to a point where, on a given year, they can win the Big 12. And if you win the Big 12, you've got a shot to be in the playoff. This year was a disappointing year for them because they thought they had a shot to win the Big 12, and it turned out they were a notch below Oklahoma and TCU. But he's, by and large, over the course of his career, he's taken them places they've never been. Meanwhile, Tennessee is a place that's really struggled over the last few years, and the fan expectations are so high there compared to in relation to maybe what they really are that I think it's a difficult it makes for a difficult job. Now, they were about to offer him a ton of money, as you referenced, and I think he at least considered it. But I think he did the smart thing in staying at Oklahoma State. I'm not sure that Tennessee is the kind of job where, you're going to last long in it if you don't win conference titles, and I don't see them set up to win conference titles anytime soon.
Let's get to the big weekend story, the Monday press conference in Westwood. Chip Kelly, the new Bruin boss. I thought it was a really entertaining press conference. I never really bought Chip to Gainesville, but so your thoughts, that hire, and along with that, the fact it's a different and much more difficult conference than when he became the Oregon coach 8 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But then on the other hand, I mean, these things don't happen in a vacuum. So although Washington is risen and those kinds of things have happened, you know, that correspondingly some other people have fallen a little bit, including Oregon over the last couple of years. So, you know, he's going to be in the South. I think the bigger question, rather than the overall strength of the league, which I think there are a lot of good teams and no elite teams this year, for example, the bigger question, rather than the overall strength of the league, is what Chip Kelly does going to be the same kind of impact as it was when he first, you know, came to Eugene first as offense coordinator and then as head coach? Is that blur offense going to, you know, discombobulate people like it did? And my answer is no, I don't think it will. But we're talking about a guy who is a huge innovator. We're talking about a guy who I don't think he's actually tied to that offense if he thinks something else is going to work better. And we're talking to a guy who, if he has a quarterback, and by the way, he can turn anybody into a good quarterback, he's going to be effective even in that offense. And so I actually think when you look at the Pac-12 South, there's hay to be made there for Chip Kelly. I think it's the kind of place, especially given the current situation at USC, where I don't completely know if Clay Helton's going to get it done there to the standards that the Trojans want. It's a great time to show up and be at UCLA.
Sure going to be a lot of fun, I'll tell you that much.
Say that again, I'm sorry?
Sure going to be fun, especially the lead-up.
Yeah, no question.
You were at the Iron Bowl Saturday. Interesting game. No turnovers. That Tiger offense, 9 of 18 on third down, outscored him in the second half. Did a good job protecting the quarterback. So how impressive was that Auburn offense, and how much do we have to consider that even though Alabama got three injured linebackers back, it's just not the same Alabama defense it was earlier in the year?
Well, I would posit this. It's not the same Alabama defense as it was last year or the year before. I'm not sure Alabama has been at any point this year as good as the immediate predecessors. I think if you look at their season this year, and you're right, they got banged up. Although some of them were back for the Auburn game. But if you look at their season this year, you can see that they rolled roughshod over the weaker portion of their schedule in September and October and looked really, really good. And we were like, okay, it's Alabama. They're the same team. Then they hit November where they played three teams, not counting Mercer, you know, the annual Cupcake Saturday that the SEC plays. But they played LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn. And by the way, LSU and Mississippi State are not terrific teams. They're just okay teams. They're bottom of the top 25 teams, as you can look at the CFP rankings and see that. And LSU pushed them around, and Alabama won at home. And Mississippi State pushed them around on both sides of the ball for 3.5 quarters, and Alabama showed resilience and won and avoided an upset. By the way, Mississippi State's a team that got blown out by Auburn and by Georgia.
Right.
And then they played Auburn. Alabama played Auburn, and they got pushed around on both sides of the ball all night long and lost by two touchdowns. And it was a pretty firm manhandling by the end of the game. And I think you have to look and say, I think they rolled roughshod over the weaker portion of a weak SEC, and when they got to the better part of the SEC, they kind of got exposed. And so I think the eye test does not really go in their favor anymore this year. Now, you know, I'm not on the committee, but and that's a good thing for everybody. But but I'm just saying, I mean, they don't have much of a resume at 11-1, and they don't really pass the eye test like you were thinking they were going to before November hit. And so I just don't think it's as good a team as we've seen from Alabama over the last few years.
A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder. So to the ACC, Miami kind of been hanging on. They had some tight wins, the Notre Dame win now less, and they got whipped by a 4-win Pitt team, faced Clemson. That's the game you'll be at. I personally think the Tigers are not going to win this game, but I think they're going to win everything. But your read, how much of a shot do you give the Canes in this one?
Look, I think the Pittsburgh game sort of exposed some things that we had thought before the Virginia Tech, before the Notre Dame games. back when we thought, okay, it's interesting that they're winning, but at some point they're going to fall because look at all these things that they keep doing and they just squeak by. Well, then they won those two games and you're like, okay, all right, maybe they're rounding into shape. And then Pittsburgh, now there's a letdown, I think, involved too, but all the things that they had gotten away with earlier in the year came back and bit them this time. And it isn't the loss doesn't really hurt them that much. I mean, obviously, if they go beat Clemson, they're going to be in the playoff.
Right.
The problem is all those things that you saw lead you to believe you're not beating Clemson. And that's kind of where I am on that. Clemson's really, really good. You may be right. They might be the team that's going to win the whole thing. But I just have a hard time seeing Miami beating them. And I think that Pittsburgh loss sort of exposed them for what they are. Now, you know, hey, this is where they get their shot to go out and prove me and anybody else wrong. And if they do, they'll be in the playoff, and then they'll get a shot to win the whole thing. But I don't like the matchup with Clemson after what we saw from them against Pittsburgh.
And lastly, rather than offer up who should be one, who should be five, does a season like this, where we've got multiple teams having a shot maybe to get in with two losses, does this lend itself to the debate to keep it as it is at four or expand? Or do we need to wait? Because I think if Oklahoma, Georgia, Clemson, and Wisconsin win, there's not a lot of debate.
Well, there won't be any debate if the top four all win. Obviously, people are picking Ohio State to beat Wisconsin, and if that happens, there's going to be a large debate about should Ohio State, with two losses, the Big Ten champion, be in, or what about that Alabama team we were just talking about? You know, if TCU beats Oklahoma, you know, that opens the door wider. You know, you could go on and on. But, look, I think a year like this is yet another reason why it's good to stay at four. Because, now, some years we've seen where really the cutoff after five, it would have been pretty clear that after five or maybe after six, there weren't enough teams to fill out an 18 bracket. This year, clearly, you could fill out an 18 bracket. That makes all the sense in the world. But I like the fact that these games down the stretch have been so meaningful, and that Saturday's conference title games are going to be so meaningful. I mean, they're de facto quarterfinals.
Yep.
SEC and the ACC, they're de facto quarterfinals because either team wins, they're in those games. And then, you know, they're almost quarterfinals and potentially quarterfinals in the Big 12 game and the Big 10 game. You know, obviously, if TCU wins and or if Ohio State wins, they're not automatically in. But I love the fact that it's that way. If this was an 18 playoff, the last few weeks of the season and even the conference title race might be diminished. Now, the one thing I would say is you'd probably have the conference champion in by default, as part of the system.
Sure.
But I'd like to stick at four, I think. And I've kind of gone back and forth on that. This year doesn't change my mind, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, I love this and the fact that, you know, a loss any of the last couple of weeks could kill you. It's the joy of college football. All right, George. Great takes all. Much to cover, and I think we did. You travel safe to the ACC title game, and who knows what we're going to have to talk about between now and next week, but I'm sure looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us, George.
Same here. Hey, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.